I'm Sue Donaldson. Welcome to Welcome Heart, Living a Legacy Life podcast. We long to live a life that matters beyond ourselves, and we can do that by investing in people and God's Word, through opening our homes, through building community, and through mentorship, which is simply sharing with another what we learn at the feet of Jesus. Thanks for joining me. Good morning. I'm so happy to introduce you to my friend, Pam Fields of tendingfields.com, which makes sense because she has lots of fields to tend. And Pam and I become friends now online, and we have a hard time not talking over each other. So we'll try to be kind and courteous. But Pam is also the founder and host of the podcast called The Mom Next Door, which you would want her to live next door. In fact, I wish she did. But Pam, tell us a little bit about your family and your ministry, and then I'm going to ask you some fun questions.
Welcome. I am ready for this.
You hope you are.
That's what I was going to say. I hope I'm ready for this because we do chat a lot and have a lot of fun. But sometimes, like voice messaging and things, we do have some time lapse between our conversations with each other. So we'll see how we do. So I am the mom of nine. My oldest is 28. My youngest just turned 11. So that is a large age span. And to top it off, my grandchildren, I have four of them, and they are ages 7 to 2. So we just kind of stepped out of having our own toddlers to having our grandbabies. They live really close to us. So it is not uncommon when I'll be sitting here recording with somebody and I will see somebody walk in the door to announce to Gaga that they are here and they need a snack. So it's a lot of fun to have them here. They were military for a while, so we weren't close. And I really appreciate that time that now they can just be in the same town. So,
and where do you live?
Okay. So we are in Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, about halfway between Nashville and Knoxville, but we're new to here because I'm also West Coast. From most of my life, we've lived in Oregon my entire married life up until October of 2020. We moved to Tennessee.
Wow. That's a big move. And where in Oregon? Cause I'm familiar with some spots.
We were from the capital, Salem. We live just outside in the countryside, and we still have two sons in Oregon, but the rest of them are pretty much near us now.
Wow, that's so great. What have you figured out most recently about the three areas that you especially are, you know, that you're called to work with moms, women?
Yeah. I think that I've noticed this recurring theme, and I had not until recently kind of brought it down to to seeing that is, those are three things that keep reoccurring. And really, they're prayer, community, and resources. I know that there is so much power in prayer. There is a need for prayer, right? We all need prayer. And sometimes we're just like, hey, could you pray for me? And then we go, yeah, I'll pray for you later. Or, oh, I'm sending a prayer. But to take the time to throw out the anchor and just pray for women has been highly valuable because I get busy and I forget, you know? So I love that anchor of prayer that brings women together and it can support each other. You know, I think you and I are both like this. Do you need a casserole? Can I have you over for dinner? Yeah. Do you want to do, you know, like... Sometimes we can't do that. And I've seen that through across the miles. Now I have so many friends on the West Coast and here I am. I can't go take them something, but I can offer prayer. And so that's been great to, I just see this recurring in prayer and then building community with each other. And, you know, I've really grown in this online area. I love community. I love building friendships and making new friends online. But I also find it's really, I think it's really important to have community and roots where you are so that when somebody is struggling, hey, you need a babysitter. Do you, you know, what can I do to be the hands and feet of Christ? And so I think both of those places are important. I know that seems strange. Some people are like, online community, is that important? But the truth is we're lonely a lot of times. And when we are lonely, we go online. And so I love to have a community there to be available for the mamas that are up nursing late at night.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah, that's a good point too. I remember nursing late at night with my firstborn. And with the firstborn, everything is, you know, 100 times harder because you don't know what you're doing. And rocking away with my Bonnie Sue and looking up, we used to have these cute little ledges or shelves towards the top of the ceiling, and I'd have books and things up there. And I looked up there and I thought, Lord, I feel like I'm up on a shelf. I'm just put up on a shelf while I'm waiting to finish this feeding, for one thing, but also raising small children. You do feel alone very much. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you this. Do you think that you can have authentic community online?
I do. I think you can.
Why?
Well, let me see. Now, can I put it into words? you know, I think that it's sometimes it's a starting place and sometimes it's a holding place.
What do you mean?
Like, there are people I've met online. It's a starting place,
right?
Which later, so it's connecting people sometimes with unique interests that they would have never found anywhere else. You know, maybe it's somebody who's dealing with cancer or, you know, some special needs or something just really unique, right? Well, you're not going to put out a billboard and walk around town. Who else has this issue or struggle? I need to find some of my people. So I think it's a starting place in that we find our tribes through some of those like things online. Okay. And what that becomes later is, hey, I'm driving through Nashville. Could we meet for coffee? Or, hey, I mean, I had one lady that I met online. and when I say this, I think to myself, I would have never given this advice. I would have never said do this in the past, right? But there's this lady I got to know online, and she was passing through from, you know, on a 15-hour drive with two of her children. And she said, hey, I'm going to be coming through your town. Maybe we could grab a cup of coffee real quick and actually meet in person. I'd love to give you a hug. And I said, yeah, but if you're traveling from whatever state it was down to South Florida, I was like, am I your half point? You want to just stay in our guest room? And she's like, I would love to not have to spend the money on a hotel. Sure. Well, then she ended up staying, I think, 2 or 3 nights.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just a lot of, I think it was 2 nights. And it turned out that there was another lady in our town here who had lost a child. And this gal that was traveling had lost a child, and they had met each other online previously.
Oh my goodness.
They found out they were going to be in the same town. So here I invite that lady over for dinner. And all of a sudden we're all connected, you know, like, so online is a starting point, but it's also, you know, if you just met them and never continued on in that relationship, cultivating, knowing what's going on in their lives, then it would kind of fizzle out. Like if you just showed up and then you never came back, it just fizzle. But, I think, I have to admit, I am a lot more active in posting on my mommy's group. It's like my living room. It's like, hey, let's get together and talk about like what's happening in life. What's the practical things? What are you struggling with? What can I pray for you about? Or what are you making for dinner? I have no idea what to make tonight. And so like in that, it's, I don't post very much on my personal page anymore, because it's just kind of like, I keep scrolling. But man, that community where you can be involved and genuinely care for each other and meet each other's needs.
I had one lady reach out to me, and I recognized her name from Instagram, but she said, oh, my husband and I are going to be in your area for vacation. Can you tell us places to go? And I said, so how do I know you? She goes, oh, I heard you speak in Florida. And they were coming from Florida to Central California. California at Christmas. And so I go, well, one place is my house. So only I wasn't quite as extensive as you were, but they came, and I told them where to visit first, a really cute little gift shop. And then they brought me gifts. And then we just had appetizers and Christmas beverages and took pictures. And she was wearing a plaid shirt, so I took lots of pictures with her and Mark. And we've continued to be friends, and she's all about hospitality, and it's been a huge blessing. And then currently, right now, I know of three different Claires who are struggling with cancer. And one is in town and she's 12. And then one is a former missionary friend in Southern California, and I can't visit her, it's too far. And then one is in South Carolina. And I thought it's easier to remember to pray for them because they're all named Claire.
Wow.
But to think that online we can support each other's in other in ways that our parents couldn't because they didn't have the internet. I mean, there are lots of problems with the internet, but let's take the positive side. Now, you've talked a lot about community. What is the name of your Facebook group in case moms want to join?
It's so simple. It's just called Tending Fields Moms Group.
Okay. Tending Fields Moms Group. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. You are have already shown that you are a networker. Is that your third thing? Your recurring themes were prayer, community, and the third
well,
one.
It's actually the other, if I was to label it, I'd say resources.
Resources.
But that's pretty much networking. When I think about it, I have not been a huge creator of resources. You know, I have gained a lot of knowledge and skills through mothering 9 children for 28 years, but I haven't had the time to invest in like making
really?
Worksheets.
Why didn't you have any time?
I
don't
know,
get
isn't
it.
That crazy? Like, oh yeah, in my spare time, I'm just going to put together a like 5-day course and a 27-page booklet and
Right.
all the things. No, so I have been a collector of resources through the years because I have been having to find what works for my family. And sometimes what works with one child does not work with the other, or a season in my life, there's something, you know, something we're working on that I need resources for. So, and also in recording my podcast and interviewing women and hearing their stories of faith, I have such a huge diversity of, you know, there's such a huge diversity among moms that I may not have knowledge of something, but I know somebody who
somebody
does.
who
You know,
does,
I
yeah.
have a friend, you know,
Yeah.
I don't know directly, but I have a friend and I want to tell you about her and she's written an amazing book or she has an amazing resource, or you're going to want to follow her on Instagram because I know she's going to reach your heart. And so, yeah, resources would be networking resources to
you know,
connect women with
yeah.
what they need.
And Pam, you're just a younger version of myself, except I didn't have time to have 9 children. But because today a woman was invited to my house for tonight for a gathering, and she wrote and said she wasn't feeling up to it. And I know she's a widow and doesn't go to church as far as I know. But I said, have you heard of Lisa Apollo? Because she writes about being a widow, and I had her on my podcast. So I said, let me send you the link. So there was just a little sharing, and Lisa will be the one to minister to her because I haven't experienced that. So that is terrific. How did you come to figure them out? You've touched on it briefly, but why do you know that these three things are something that God really wants you to use to minister to women?
Well, I think I'd kind of been doing a lot of these all along. It did take somebody, Ruthie Gray, kind of like pointing it out and said, do you see this recurring theme? And you were part of that too. Like, you know, let's put that to words.
I guess let me ask this. What made you think, gosh, I really want to help other moms?
I think that as often is the case, we have an area of need or void in our own life, and that kind of becomes our ministry. I also think it's interesting that sometimes we see the needs in others before we see it in ourselves, even though we may have been feeling it for ourselves. That makes sense. Like, I can see a mom who's struggling. I can see a mom who's frustrated with that little boy who keeps doing the stupidest stuff. You know, like I see it. And the reason I see it and I recognize it in her is because I felt it before. So even though I did not see it in myself and recognize like, oh, that mom's getting frustrated with, you know, Pam needs to figure this out and get a solution, I felt it and I know what it feels like to feel unprepared and ill-equipped to be a mom. And I know that, you know, when sleep is little and the demands on your time is Hi, I'm just feeling like a little underwater. Like, I just need to figure this out. We feel like we're in it alone. Like, I have to figure this all out on my own. And I felt that struggle. And so now I'm like, I would love to just throw out the life preserver to another mom and go, you don't have to figure this out on your own. Yes, you are on your own in a day-to-day basis, unless somebody lives near you who can deliver you a casserole. But I think that we can connect here and I can point you to somebody because there's other people that have walked through it. You're not alone. Let's just figure out the resources you need.
I think one of something I like to think about hospitality is that hospitality is coming alongside,
Yeah.
and that's what you're doing. You're coming alongside another mom. And as a mom, we don't necessarily need tips. We don't necessarily need a printable. You were talking about, oh, I haven't had time
Yeah.
to write one. Don't worry about that. There's lots of mom books out there. What we really need is someone not to judge us. We need
Yeah.
them not to judge us. We need them to
Yeah.
come alongside and say, yeah, that sucks. And I
Yeah.
didn't used to say that word, but I'm now used to it because of my kids. But that is really difficult. And I'm just
Right.
so sorry. I remember my brother sent me a letter to comfort me at one point, and he says, I don't want to say a whole lot because, like Job's friends, they were better friends before they opened their mouths. So then they went all downhill from then on out. And so, what you're doing in your community group, because people don't have to sit and listen to Pam Fields all day, they can just join the Facebook
Right.
group when they have time and get a little bit of encouragement and also share their own
Right.
tips. Because with
Yeah,
each
for
child,
sure.
we learn something more and we kind of chuckle to ourselves about how bad we were at the beginning. I have apologized to my oldest child that I'm sorry I didn't know what I was doing. I'm sure they're all in therapy, but don't tell me about it. We did the best we could. I would like you to share some of the story of your upbringing and how God has redeemed it. Because when I first heard it, I thought, wow, people need to hear the story. And sometimes it's hard to tell our early stories. Especially if they were filled with pain. But the reason I want you to share some of it today, Pam, is because there are women listening today who might still be stuck in that pain.
Yeah.
And when we're stuck, we blame instead of grow. And I think we always continue to grow. And already everybody has a little story of pain, but to me, you have a huge story of pain. So if you could just tell our audience about how you were raised. And if you forget some parts, I'm going to ask you at least one thing, but I remember it, but I don't remember the whole
Well, that's good. You can tell everybody my story. It might be easier
I don't remember it,
that way.
so go ahead.
I know, I know. And this is the hard part. I think in some regards, my podcast, listening to other women's testimonies and their stories of faith, I need to hear those, right? I need to hear those, but it also saves me from having to share my own. And so this is where I'm not super well versed and professional and comfortable, but Sue, you're my friend and you know me. And so I do feel a little bit better stepping into that here where I can see you and think about that. So there's also always the question, like, how far do we go back? I was thinking just to kind of set the scene a little bit. My parents met at a Christian camp. My dad was a lifeguard. My mom was the camp nurse. They fell in love and then they went out in to do ministry. They were missionaries. They were deputized and raised funds and they went out at the go to be missionaries. And
In a foreign country or no?
no, to Native American Indians. And so it was all within the US. My sister was born in Washington. I was born in Canada, and my brother was born in Phoenix. And so, they kind of moved around where there were Indian tribes and did certain work with them. I went to powwows when I was a kid, and have Navajo dresses still in my hope chest of little dresses that I got dressed in when I was little. So I think it started out with a real beautiful beginning and very gospel focused and ministry. But then my years kind of go dark. I don't really remember a lot of my childhood. When I did start waking up to what I do remember my childhood, it wasn't good. There was,
for instance,
you're going to ask me. There was spiritual abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, things like that. And though my parents were in full-time ministry, it was all for show. It was not lived out in our home. We did not read the Bible. We did not do devotions. We did not pray. And again, my memory is probably a little cloudy. So maybe when we were younger, we started off doing some of those things. But when my memory kicks in, that wasn't the case. And some of our family game nights when I was in about second grade were a Ouija board, pornography, alcohol to the children. It was just very convoluted. And but yet my dad wore a ministerially, what do you call it? The collar, you know, and we were missionaries. We would travel around and get put on stage and you sing nothing but the blood of Jesus. And then they'd pass the plate for donations. And then I remember driving away and my dad was very flippant and made fun of the congregations and the church people. Wow. He didn't seem to like churches, church people. He didn't seem to like Christians, but yet he was showing up on Sunday for some itinerant pastoring and to pass the plate. So
when did you start realizing that this was wrong?
You know what? I think we get used to what we live in. We mm-hmm. think it's normal and we don't have any idea, right?
It's like a frog in a frying pan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was, I remember it was about second grade because I know we were living in Montana at the time. And then, like I said, the years go dark. And I think when I was in about junior high, it kind of clicked that nobody gets to spend the night at my house. I always have to go to other people's parties. I don't, you know, it's just, I kind of recognized that our family was different, mm-hmm. but everybody's family is different. No
right.
two families are the same, right? So ours is just different. And the summer when I was 15, my grandma had sent me to a Christian summer camp. And I just remember looking at everybody else thinking, I want what they have. Like, this is not my life and I want their life. I don't want my life. And so I went home from this camp and it was already my habit to go to spend a lot of time with my grandma. She was like very precious to me and just ministered to me when I needed that care. And I would often spend the night with her on Saturday nights. We watched Lawrence Welk and, you know, all those, you know what I mean? But normally I'd wake up in the morning with her and I'd go to church and the highlight of church was her passing me the mints and the gum, right? Like yeah. That was why I sat in church with grandma. But it was at that point when I was 15, I said, Grandma, I want to go to church with you in the morning. And I'd spend the night and then I started going to the youth group and that youth group just ministered to me. The youth pastor and his wife really just took me under their wing and they ministered to me and they taught me about the Bible. And I began to grow spiritually.
But did you start telling your grandmother or this youth pastor and his wife what was going on at home?
No, I don't think I ever. I mean, they kind of knew that some things were weird because by then my dad had actually been arrested and I need to go find the microfiche. There are some newspaper clippings I still have. Because of course it hit the paper when a pastor gets arrested.
Right.
And so it was things like furnishing pornography to minors, furnishing alcohol to minors, and sodomy with a minor. So those are not pleasant things, right? Of course, my dad was like, it's all lies. It's all lies. That's ridiculous. They're just, you know, and then I'm thinking, but you gave us alcohol. You put pornography in front of our eyes. I know you touched me in ways and places you shouldn't have ever done that. So for me, I'm like, well, he's lying, but you know, what do? I was in eighth grade going into ninth grade when that happened. and when he was arrested. And then it was just a year later at 15 where I came to the Lord at summer camp. The part I remember
is that I think it was a teacher who kept you from going home because he was going to be arrested. Was there something like that? Am I misremembering?
No, you're kind of right. Is that when my sister and I were driving home from school in her little VW bug, there was somebody on the side of the road that flagged us down and said, do not go home. You do not want to go home. Go somewhere safe because there was a police raid on our home. And so my sister and I went to one of her teacher's houses and just waited out the night, calling in. We were only instructed, don't go home, call into grandma's house. She'll give you the next instruction. So every few hours we'd call in and say, what are we supposed to do now? Where are we supposed to go? Where are we sleeping tonight? You know? And we never went back to that house ever. I don't know how our things were removed from the house. I don't know. You know, I just know within a couple weeks we were in a rental house. Probably a whole nother story, but years later as an adult, all my children were probably born. It was probably only 6-7 years ago, maybe 10, time flies. They were going to actually, bulldoze that house to put in a shopping mall, and they were having a garage sale. And I did go to the house, to the garage sale so I could see it before it got bulldozed. And I tell you, I went home thinking, I hope none of the demonic like follows me home and attaches it. So it was like, that was such a bad place to be, you know? So.
Well, I know you got saved around 15. So how do you, I mean, some people in this situation, it's so sad. They never recover. Yeah. And they're still, you know, blaming their parents, and for good reason. I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I'm not blaming anybody. Mm-hmm. But your story, I mean, no one would know this about you now. And I don't, and even though parts are dark, you know, that'll come up when it needs to come up. Mm-hmm. But where do you see how God has healed you and made you be able to help other women and moms? For one thing, I think it makes you non-judgmental when you've suffered yourself. And I just heard Holly Girth say that, you know, because of her own struggle, then she's able to help heal others.
Yeah.
And so how do you see God giving you the victory? Let's put it that way.
Well, at that moment when I was 15 and started going to church and being involved and people just ministering to me, I don't think I realized what was going on. I don't think I realized the ministering that they did, you know? Mm-hmm. And as I've grown, had my own family, and a lot of times I powered through, and I can go back to that. But then I look in retrospect and I just think that moment when I was 15, the verse about the Lord picked me up out of a miry pit and set my feet on solid ground.
Wow.
And that was that point, you know, that absolutely changed my life. I've even talked to my youth pastor and his wife in the last year, and I've shared with them some things that have gone on more currently in my life. And Steve wrote back and he said, you know, I had a hard time as a youth pastor at the church at that point, but I really fully believe that God put us in that church for you. And if you were the, oh, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, that's all right.
If you were the only reason why we were there to see where you came from and where you are now, it was worth it because they had a hard time as youth pastors there. And I said, I know, Steve, I think God placed you there for me to help me move into life and to adulthood and to step out. So I really, when I said I just powered through, it's like when you've lived through some of these traumatic childhood things, you become like shellacked. Right. Yeah. You just, you're a shell and you don't respond and you don't emote and you don't, it's not going to affect me. I'm just going to keep moving. People ask me, how did you raise 9 children? And I'm like, I just powered through. I'm not going to be emotional. I'm just going to production. I know how to be efficient because it was just probably a protective layer of me. Now, I'm not sorry for any of the children I have. I'm so grateful and thankful that God gave them to me. But I see that I probably didn't connect with some of them emotionally, and I didn't care for them in some ways where my younger children have the benefit of a mom who has about a year and a half ago started going to counseling. I'd never, until I was about 50, never been to counseling. And though I knew my family was different, I knew it was unique. I don't think I realized the depth of it until honestly, probably about 2 years ago.
Wow.
Year and a half, 2 years ago. And it was funny. I was having some medical things kind of showing up and I'm losing words and I'm forgetting things. And I've got some of this stuff. So I go to a gal to talk about, talking to the nurse practitioner about, hey, what's going on medically? And she said, well, you know, you're kind of exhibiting some PTSD stuff. Have you talked to a counselor? And I was like, I don't have PTSD. Like, that's ridiculous. She
and
goes,
who has
if you talk
time
to
for
a
counselor anyway, right?
I know. And I'm like, no, well, okay, fine. I'll go once to write it off. This is ridiculous. And then, when I get in there, she's like asking me about stress in my life. I'm like, I don't have stress. I don't even have stress in my life. Like, I don't, it does not compute. I don't,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't see my life as stressful. And then in retrospect, I think everybody says every time you have a baby, it's about 18 months of adjustment, you know, that stress in your life, when you have a job change, when you have a move, if you have, and so as I'm like unfolding my story and I literally have a timeline of my life, probably 6 years ago, somebody said, make a timeline of your life just for fun. And as you think and remember, put things. So I took that timeline into the counselors and I was showing her, I'm like, well, this happened then in this house. And she goes, that's a trauma. And I'm like, oh, really? No, I don't think it. No, that's a trauma. Then I go again and she'd be like, big T trauma there.
Really?
I wouldn't really.
Wow.
And then, oh, and wow. That's a little T and that's, and she's like, okay, now we're up to seven or whatever. And I'm like, I didn't know that. Mm. Like I didn't recognize that. And so now, since I'm learning to recognize, like I'm like learning how to recognize my feelings. I don't think I cried like ever until one of my sons left for boot camp. And then it was like, I could just walk around with a sponge rubber banded to my face, you know, because I thought, what is this? I have never cried before in my life. And from then on, now
obviously you cry at the drop of a hat.
Oh, I can cry at the most ridiculous, you know, Hallmark commercial, regular commercial, anything. So it's so funny how the Lord is like, I think for a while he just wanted to grow in me other ways. And now it's like, well, now there's a new phase I'm teaching you to have that compassion and empathy. And I mean, I've always had a care for moms, but I'm seeing things differently and I'm learning to minister to my friends in a different way through different eyes too.
You may have just answered this question, but I did write down, did you have to overcome some preconceived ideas about God or yourself once you recognized that you had been in trauma?
You know, it's so funny. I think people have said, you know, I came to that point when I finally realized that God just loved me. And I'm like, I've always known God loved me. I'm like, I will compete for his favorite. I know I'm his favorite, you know?
No, I'm his favorite.
And so, you know what, but that goes to like, I've just always known God was there. And now I did have obviously some spiritual teaching, some church influence by going to church with my grandma and by getting brought around on some of these ministry things. It was not lived out in the home, but I did have some exposure. So maybe that was, even though it was convoluted, it did give me a little bit of knowledge. We listened to Bullfrogs and Butterflies and Music Machine on the, you know, the big black records. So my parents did provide us with that, you know, so I have in some ways some Christian upbringing, but it was just very convoluted. So what did you ask me?
I just wondered if it influenced the way that you've parented.
Oh, I know what you were going to say. I was telling you that I feel like I've always known God was there.
Yes.
Like, and I know that, like, when I was in high school and even before that, it was like I would see scary, things in my home or on the ceiling at night. I slept with all my lights on and just scared. And, but, I knew there was a Bible out on the shelf, and I would go and I would go to sleep holding this old King James Bible. And when I couldn't sleep, I would go get that Bible and I would hold it. And I knew that when I would hold that Bible, I would fall asleep.
Wow.
And I just know that God has had his hand on me. So I've just always known he was with me. And so transitioning into how I parented, I had to learn to be a mom. I had, everybody has to learn. We're all taking the things from our childhood and it's a little mix up. These things I learned and it was beneficial. It was helpful. And these are the things I want to repeat. And then these things were not great and I don't want to repeat them. And so, strangely enough, the house that I grew up in was a hospitality house. It was, again, strange, but my dad would drive around town, and if there was a hitchhiker out there, he'd pick them up and bring them home. And they could live with us for anywhere from a day to a year and just
But you couldn't
meeting
have
them
your
on the
friends,
sidewalk.
but you couldn't have your friends overnight, though.
No. Well, and they weren't, it wasn't that my friends were disallowed, it was that their parents wouldn't allow them to come.
So
Does
they
that make
knew.
sense?
Oh yeah, they knew something was going on. They didn't want to tell their
Well,
kids.
yeah, and I think in retrospect, we live differently now in this time period than we did in the 80s. And I think at this point, somebody probably would have called CSD in my childhood, right? We just didn't really do that. People just didn't send their kids over to play at my house or to spend the night at my house instead of trying to go in and remove me. That's kind of how we dealt with things back then, I think.
Yeah, and that's
So,
not that long ago.
but I do think that, that's something where, well, there's always room at the table for more. Yeah, just, I mean, somebody needs a meal, bring them over, let them, I'll have a party. Let's have a big meal. And so that is one thing I brought into my marriage and to my parenting is just this. Yeah, it's not a big deal. Let's make food for more people, but there's most of the things I think I learned in my childhood. I went, I'm not repeating that. I'm gonna live my life different, raise my family different. Obviously, with my husband making those decisions with me, I'm like, I'm doing a 360,
What advice or counsel do you have for any listeners who are still healing from an abusive or wound-filled upbringing?
Well, I think that we need to surround ourselves with people that will encourage us, that will point us to scripture. And I didn't do well with self-care. So I think that now in retrospect, I mean, I kind of felt like powering through, was caring for my children, and that's what I needed to do. But I think sometimes we kind of need to throw out the anchor and grow, learn a little bit more about what struggles we're having, but we can't do it by ourselves. We need that community. We need somebody who'll pray for us. We need to be in the Word. And I think that for me, man, just learning to read God's Word. And I may not even understand it all the time, but I'm going to read it and I'm going to be committed. I'm going to trust God to finish the work he started in me and to, continue bringing people into my life. I think we have to have some discernment. I also think it's interesting that God has given me the spiritual gift of discernment. And I think he did that for my protection in that he taught me who to listen to and who not to listen to. And so I think we need to have people around us to breathe into our lives, but we need to make sure that they're pointing us to the Lord, things that give us life.
And this is a legacy podcast, and we've actually already touched on legacy. But what legacy do you want to make sure that you are leaving for those who know and love you?
I think I'd like my home and myself to be remembered as just having an atmosphere of support and care for people, be it my own children, my grandchildren, neighbors, people I meet online. I would just like to have it be a place that you can be when you're good and things are good, but it's also a place where somebody can sit with you if things are not good, you know?
And what are you doing right? Well, you've already given me some examples, but did you want to leave another example? What are you doing right now to make sure that's going to happen?
Yeah, and I think probably online, in person, wherever I can, just kind of keeping my ears open and listening for needs, looking for needs. But I think it's also really important to not only look for the spoken ones, but you know, there's especially online in the virtual world. You know, I had a friend the other day, she just kept posting about a bunch of really hard things. And I just sent her a message and I said, "How are you doing today? I've noticed some of your posts have gotten like looks like you're probably struggling." And then she's like, "Yeah, I was going through, you know, these photo albums and raising a prodigal's just hard. And I'm just, you know," so I think that is, that atmosphere of support and care and looking out for others, even when it's not directly, "Hey, I need help. Hey, can you support me?" Or, you know, sometimes it's a little unseen. We need to look for those things.
Well, you know, we've never even met, and yet you'll ask about my kids and you're praying. And I'm always so surprised. I thought, "Oh, she's praying for my kids. It's the best thing you can tell a friend." Well, you've already explained how your home is an open home. And hospitality doesn't have to do only with our homes or with feeding extra people, though I know you can because you've described many times. Yeah, because you invite one family over and they also have 9 kids. So I thought, well, there's a crowd. So that is a unique gift, but it's something that just keeps on giving. Is there anything you want to add about showing off God's welcome heart?
I'm not sure if I have more. I feel like we've kind of chatted it up.
You've done a great job, Pam. Listen, Pam is a great resource of prayer and networking and community. And if you would like to be in her Facebook group, is called Tending Fields.
Tending Fields Moms Group.
Moms Group. And also she has a bracelet, how to make a prayer bracelet, which you wear for your kids. Is that it? Yeah. So
yeah,
she'll show you how to do that. So just sign up for her newsletter. I'll put the link in show notes. And since it is around Mother's Day, I thought it'd be great for us all to learn to have prayer bracelets. Even if you don't have that many children, I still have a hard time remembering what day and what time to pray for everybody that I know and love. Pam, you have been an absolute delight. Thank you for being my friend and my prayer partner. And
oh, I'm so blessed to be your friend.
Follow Pam Fields, and her podcast again is called
The Mom Next Door, Stories of Faith.
There we go. The Mom Next Door, Stories of Faith. And if you want to tell your stories of faith to Pam, you can reach her on her website too. Thank you, Pam.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
Until next time, think about your legacy, the one God has called you to live, all for heaven's sake. I would love to speak at your next Christian Women's event. See my keynotes and retreat series, as well as the show notes from today's broadcast at welcomeheart.com. Thanks for coming. You're always welcome here.